So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review,
right now, right? That's what you say. We get it by now.
And the most exciting 2 hours on national television, right here live on TBS. Right now, let's hold on a second. Just a second. Ladies and gentlemen, don't leave your television sets. I cannot believe what I am hearing. Oh. This is the worst news I heard since my mother-in-law announced she was going to move in a year and a half ago. You've got to be kidding me. Ladies and gentlemen, I can't believe it. Bobby the Brain Heenan. What a nightmare. It continues. Heenan, won't you leave me alone? You follow me everywhere. What are you doing here?
I work here. What are you doing here?
Well, who says you work here?
Who says I work here? Try Ted and Jane, the Turners. I'm on board now, pal. And these people are going to have to learn some respect. Because, pal, I could become your boss like that.
You know, Heenan, I got to tell you something. As long as you are in WCW, you're like Tonya Harding. You're going to be on thin ice here.
How would you like me to take a crowbar to your kneecaps and reverse them? I got work to do. You shut up, little man.
Darling, you've got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go? If you say that you are mine, I'll be here till the end of time.
It's been 2 weeks since you looked at me. How are you, Way? It's review away time. I was trying to go into a Bare Naked Ladies song, but that wasn't going to work out.
Oh.
But it's been 2 weeks since we had our last show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, that means it's time for review away.
Our last review away.
Yes. We've talked many times since.
Has it only been 2 weeks? I feel like it's been more.
No, it's always 2 weeks.
What did we do last time?
We did our live viewing. It was our anniversary show.
So actually, I feel like it's been even more longer than that, because we actually recorded that thing like on the Monday.
We did?
Yeah.
Oh.
We did.
I thought we did it on the Friday.
Oh, we did it live, yeah.
Wow. Way to just completely expose ourselves.
Nope. It's been like 3 weeks.
How are you?
Good, man. How are you? That's the more important question.
I'm better than I was when we last spoke on SmackDown this week. My throat is fine.
Okay.
Typically when I go through this sickness, and this is crazy because if you are an ardent listener, you will know that I was sick 3 weeks ago. And usually I'll get sick, and then it's 6 months before I get another cold. This one, 3 weeks later, I got sick again.
Damn.
So this was very surprising to me. So anyway.
The lack of sleep?
Probably a lack of sleep, and just overall, like it was just one of those things where my wife got sick, our child got sick, I got sick. So it was just inevitable. But typically what will happen is, first it's the throat, and it's awful. Mm. Then it goes up, and then it's like a cold, and there's one day where it's just like your nose is gross and it's disgusting. Then the next day, you're just all stuffed up, and then it turns into a cough. Well, somehow, I think I went from the throat to the stuffed up part without the gross nose day. No. I think I avoided that.
Okay.
That's what I'm hoping I've done.
Huh.
So I feel significantly better today than 24 hours ago, where I came in, I did the show with you, I did a show with Corderas, I interviewed Kevin Lee. And then I interviewed David Lagana for 90 minutes. And then after that, thought I was done and I had to do some UFC throws here at the Fight Network. And then I went home and I was able to sleep on Wednesday night for about 10 hours straight. And it was wonderful.
Mm,
wow. Never underestimate the power of sleep.
Yeah. Wow. I take that for granted.
How are you though? How are your...
I'm pretty good. Yeah. I kind of strained my lower back.
But, oh no. Was this a jiu-jitsu injury or just wear and tear?
No, it was trying to lift a case of canned goods. Injury.
Oh no. Did you lift it with your back and not your legs?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's what everyone always says. Don't lift with your back. I don't know how to do that though.
I didn't realize it was a can of or a box of canned goods until I attempted to
What did you think was in there? Paper?
I thought food. It was just like leftover food in our house.
Oh.
And I thought it was just like a box of food because it was like a sealed box. And it wasn't until I attempted to lift it, pulled my back, that I realized, oh, this is heavy food.
Oh. And you pulled something in your back.
Yeah, I think so. I just strained it.
Is it a lot of pain or just
no,
an annoying
it's fine.
Pain?
It was really bothering me yesterday, but I actually did some yoga yesterday, so
yoga.
It really helped.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Very cool. I notice here you've brought your official Starbucks mug.
It's a plastic.
It's a plastic cup. Do you actually have Starbucks coffee in it, or is it other?
I have green tea. I have green tea that I'm drinking courtesy of our friends at the MMA complex.
Oh, wow.
Bought me like a can of green tea when I went down to LA.
Oh, that's so very nice.
Very nice of them. Amongst some other cool shit that they...
Actually, when I was sick the other day, Suzanne, who helps us do review of SmackDown, got me some Throat Coat organic tea.
Have you tried it?
I haven't yet, no.
I'm sure it's excellent.
I don't have a mug here at work.
Probably better for you than coffee.
It definitely is better than coffee. You know, I've run into a problem where I went across the street right before, and all I wanted was a small coffee. And I go there regularly. So when this one woman is there, she knows what my order is.
Yeah.
So I walk in, and before I even walk up, she's grabbed this large and has started filling it.
Wow.
So it's not as though I could even...
I know.
I can't just say, oh, I don't want that today.
It's awkward because it's almost like a sign of like, oh, you're a warm, friendly customer. I know you. You're my friend.
There's part of me that at first I was like, oh, this is great. It's like I've got my regular order. I don't have to repeat it. But then there's the part of me that I feel now constrained to this. Like, maybe sometimes I don't want to get this particular kind of coffee. And today I didn't want the size of coffee. So do I make an awkward, toss that out and I'd rather a small. Not much I could do, could I?
What you have to do is you have to get the jump on her. And just before you even make eye contact or she even notices that you're here, you'd be like.
I was 10 feet out.
And she saw you?
Yeah.
Damn, you got to sneak in there next time.
It was just I had to go with this, but it's kind of it's tough.
I'm sure you could say it, and then she'll maybe adjust, or maybe you'll even get this large for free.
Then the other part thinks, I wonder if people, like, because it's a large.
Yeah.
I mean, it's to their benefit that they just keep giving me this. Like, they got an extra 50 cents out of me because of this large that.
Yeah, of course.
Well, I'm just saying it's, are they.
Is it to your benefit or to their benefit?
I mean, they are benefiting from this.
Well.
Like if I was a regular getting a small coffee, would they be so quick to grab the small?
I would assume so. I would think so. But the incentive is certainly there now that you're a big spender, getting your large coffees.
I feel I only thought so deeply into this because of Curb Your Enthusiasm. I feel this is the kind. This would carry 15 minutes of that show.
Oh, for sure.
Have you watched the new one yet?
I haven't yet.
Man, what's wrong with you?
I'm actually kind of waiting, maybe to see if you like to let them build up.
I might
binge them. Yeah.
I've been watching Narcos season 3. I finally got around to it.
Yeah, and
pretty violent.
Not as good as the first two seasons.
It's pretty good.
But it's pretty good. Okay.
Yeah, and this is with Escobar no longer part of it.
Yeah.
So they've moved on to the Cali cartel. Mm-hmm. But it's a really good show. I don't know if it'll continue or not. It's a very it's a show that has it's going through its problems right now.
What do you mean? Oh, yeah, I heard about the location.
One of the guys doing a site survey ended up killed in Mexico. That's crazy. And then I believe it's Escobar's brother is suing them.
Really?
So
for
it's
what?
I don't know the specifics.
It's a dramatization of the events.
I don't know if it's – I don't know exactly what he is suing over. Google could probably answer that. But it's a very good show.
It's a scary show to tackle if you're a producer, you know?
Oh, yeah. Like they're actually going to Mexico and doing this. It's like, man, I was talking to someone. They were like, you know, Soundstage sounds like a great idea for this show.
Yeah, certainly.
But it's incredible. Like the shots they have, just the budget for the show is incredible.
Netflix is where it's at, man.
Yeah. I think they're on some of their tiers now. They're increasing the price. Some people are upset about it.
They're increasing I used to pay, I think, $9.99. Now I think it's like $11.99.
Oh, so the WWE Network would be like, sweet.
Great value.
Now we don't have that barrier.
But they're looking to increase their price too, I'm sure, at any time.
You know? I think they could easily get away with it. The WWE Network.
I think so too.
I would say 95% of people wouldn't even... I mean, they might complain about it, but they're not going to drop the service over it.
You'll get a few initial people that might. But then, like, WrestleMania will come along, and it's still a better deal than what people were paying before that, right?
Yeah. And there's... I mean, it's not very hard to get the WWE Network for free either. They make it very easy for you.
Yes. It's also not that hard to stream things. But the convenience, I think, is worth...
Whatever. There's something to be said for just convenience than going out of your way to get that. Clash of the Champions.
Which is available on the WWE Network.
Yes. I'm going to guess that this show was, when we announced we were going to review this show, I don't know what the reaction was like of the listener at home. I don't think anyone responded, yes!
How much feedback do we have?
One. This was early 90s WCW. I don't know.
How many people do you think are listening right now?
I think some people will be listening just for a literal review of a show they probably have no clue what the contents of are.
So the guy who left his feedback, maybe somebody driving like in some highway, middle of nowhere.
People that are out of other podcasts might be listening to this one.
Yeah.
So we're going to get into this show. I'll take the blame on this one.
No, you.
This was a very spur of the moment decision we made at the end.
It was a good suggestion. I mean, Bobby Heenan had obviously just passed away at the time we decided on this show, and this was his first WCW show. Made total sense.
And it was also the first WCW show for Commissioner Nick Bockwinkel, which was kind of interesting that we had Bobby Heenan and Nick Bockwinkel, which were, I mean, the two were completely linked throughout their time in the AWA, very synonymous with one another's careers. And here they are, not only debuting in WCW on the same night, but even calling a match together on the show. Plus, we had Gordon Solie in there for a few matches. And also, Dusty Rhodes' final show as WCW booker, as he was being ousted in favor of a new committee that they were assembling. And Dusty would be transitioned into just an announcer after this, so remaining with the company but no longer booking. So it was kind of a historically notable show for WCW, but one that I can't say anyone years later would be reminiscing about. Boy, where were you the night of January 27th, 1994?
Is that simply just the nature of the Clash of the Champions itself, where they're more, at least in this era, more so lead-ups to pay-per-views rather than actual, like they're like Saturday night's main event?
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, this one in particular, yes, they were promoting Super Brawl for the next month, but they were also pushing that weekend's Saturday night show to feel much more important than this show. I mean, we had matches getting set up for Saturday night, and just felt like Saturday night was the bigger show than the Clash of the Champions show was.
What was the Saturday night show? Was that a house show or was that?
No, just their usual 6:05 show on TBS. Their flagship show. That's what it felt like on this show, which took place from the Centroplex in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Did a 3.5 rating, 5.1 share.
Double teaming could be legal when World Heavyweight Champion Nature Boy Ric Flair and that man called Sting team up to battle WCW International Champion Ravishing Rick Rude and deposed World Champion Vader in a special elimination tag team war. Feathers will fly when Kentucky Colonel Rob Parker goes beak to beak with high-flying Brian Pillman, and the loser must dress as a chicken on national TV. Real American Dustin Rhodes attempts to seize the world television title from Royal Rat Lug Steven Reed. The student challenges the teacher when Ice Train scrimmages former All-American Ron Simmons. High-flying Hunts, Too Cold Scorpio, and Marcus Bagwell challenge the manhood of Paul Orndorff and Paul Roma. And the lovable lunatics Max Payne and Cactus Jack bring you out Nasty the Nasty Boys when World Championship Wrestling presents Clash of the Champions.
Maybe the best-dressed individual on this show was, during the opening graphics, Ric Flair in his Christmas sweater.
Oh, I missed that.
Oh, he was wearing this sweater that was very un-Ric Flair-like. Looked like he was just at home during the holidays with this sweater on. This Christmas. Is babyface Chris Ric Flair as well.
Oh, Christmas Ric Flair.
Christmas Flair, huh. Yes.
Christmas Ric Flair.
He was teaming with Sting in the main event. We also had a match where the loser would dress as a chicken, and we had the introduction of the lovable lunatics of Cactus Jack and Max Payne, and as they were previewing the rest of the card, Bagwell and Scorpio challenge the manhood of Paul Orndorff and Paul Roma. Wow. Challenge their manhood.
Man versus man?
Men versus men.
Men versus men.
Yes.
Hmm.
Yes. Manhood was on the line tonight, so.
Isn't that, yeah, okay. All right. So how did they actually follow through?
By having interference with someone using a loaded boot to win.
Right. But where was the manhood? Where was the sacrifice of manhood? Afterwards?
I think the manhood was in their trunks.
And I think that's lost, where it resided. They lost it in the back after the match?
We probably had to tune into Saturday night to see. Just like the chicken suit we wouldn't be able to see on this show. We'd have to wait till Saturday night. When did you watch this show? How long ago?
I watched it over the past couple days. Yeah, 2 days.
Did this take a few sittings?
Two of them.
Okay.
It wasn't a tough show. I mean,
it was a short was show short. In comparison to WrestleMania 17. We had 90 minutes here.
Mm-hmm.
So not a killer. But
I preferred WrestleMania 17, obviously.
Slightly, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I always prefer a good, eventful show to one that's just kind of there.
I was being pretty sarcastic there.
Oh.
Anyway.
I couldn't tell.
All right. Well, Gene Okerlund opened the show, and then he gets word of someone arriving, and he tells us not to leave your television sets. I cannot believe what I'm hearing. The worst news I've heard since my mother-in-law announced she was moving in. And out comes Bobby the Brain Heenan wearing a blazer that looked like he was the captain on a cruise ship or something.
Hmm. This, I really did not pay as much attention to the fashion on this show. Oh, I wish I did.
I was keenly aware of the fashion choices of sweater Ric Flair and this red tuxedo or red jacket that Bobby was wearing.
Yeah.
Okerlund says, "You follow me everywhere." And Heenan says he works here now. And a weasel chant begins, and he tells Bobby Heenan, "Well, buddy, you're going to be on thin ice here like Tonya Harding."
How's that for a pop culture reference?
What an introduction. A 1994 introduction by Mean Gene Okerlund. And this was, to just put it into perspective, December was Bobby Heenan's write-off on WWF television, which, as a lot of Heenan's career has been reported on over the last few weeks, what seems to have been the situation was that he had an escalator in his contract in the WWF that his salary would have jumped up so many tens of thousands of dollars in 1994, and they didn't want to. So he was basically let out of his WWF deal, and it seems that it wasn't clear he was necessarily going to WCW, but then they made him a big offer, and he came to WCW.
Are those things good to have in your contract?
I guess depends on the state of your company.
Yeah, I guess so.
You become quite the annoyance if suddenly we're paying you $50,000 this year and next year you're due to make $80,000.
Yeah, I mean, contracts, I guess, are only so meaningful. I don't know. It's tricky.
There probably could have been some kind of lawsuit in there, depending on the language of the contract, what was owed to you. I mean, it could have just been an option on the promotion's behalf that they could activate it or not. I mean, that's not – that's standard. And sometimes it's the player that gets to activate the option.
So Bobby Heenan here, I mean, the crowd immediately takes to him. They were building him up, assuming that the audience knew exactly who he was, assuming that the audience had seen him and watched him in the WWF. And I always found that pretty interesting because you don't necessarily see the reverse. Not to say that WWE too often would hire announcers from WCW. But let's say like Jim Ross came in. I suppose Jim Ross maybe not as big of a name back then as Bobby Heenan was at this time. But still, they'd made no real fanfare about, hey, we got this guy from WCW, Jim Ross. He was just kind of generic announcer that we've hired. Whereas here, they were banking on the fact that you knew their personas from the WWF.
Yeah, when Jim Ross went to the WWF the year prior, everyone remembers his debut at WrestleMania in Las Vegas with the toga, and he wasn't even scheduled to call the show that day. It's not like he was coming in to instantly be the number one announcer. It just so happened Gorilla Monsoon was sick that day. And
wow, it was your first show, WrestleMania.
Yeah, and Gorilla just did a quick intro on the show, and that was it. And then Jim Ross called the show. And to those that really followed it, I mean, it was a significant deal. Jim Ross, if you had grown up listening to him on the NWA and WCW, mm-hmm. it was a big thing. But you're right. It's not like they held a parade because Jim Ross was coming right. to the WWF or when Tony Schiavone went there for the 1 year.
But it kind of shows you their philosophy behind any of the talent that would jump from the WCW to the WWF. They would be rebranded more often than not. But the reverse, you would see people, even if they couldn't keep their gimmicks, maybe get a version of their gimmicks.
Like, oh, you mean like the boss later on this show?
Yes.
Bruce Springsteen mm-hmm. in WCW? We look back at Bobby Heenan's WCW career, and that's part of the reason I wanted to go back to this show, was that, you know, when you look back at the career of Bobby Heenan, WCW is not a high point. It's not where you look at for his best work. In fact, it's probably some of his worst work. But on this night, this to me was vintage Bobby Heenan, sure. and he felt he was super motivated in this new environment. And I thought he was great throughout the show.
Your first day on the job, I mean, I think you would expect somebody
you would
to
hope
motivate,
he cares.
Right? Yeah.
Wouldn't that have been a show if we just had, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
So anyway, he joins Tony Schiavone on the announce team. And our first match is Paul Orndorff and Paul Roma, joined by the assassin in their corner, Jody Hamilton, taking on Too Cold Scorpio and Marcus Alexander Bagwell, who have the 1993 Manager of the Year, Teddy Long, in their corner.
Wow.
And Heenan says to go call your mother, father, sister, and dog and let them know Bobby Heenan is in WCW and that TBS will soon be the brain station.
Good.
He had all his lines ready here.
I know.
The assassin has been helping Orndorff and Roma of late with his loaded mask, where he would take an object, place it into his mask, and then hit people with his head.
That's
Which seems like that would really hurt you.
Yeah.
Like if I had, what would be a really hard object? If I put this phone against my forehead and hit you, I think I'd regret that.
I would hope that you had Apple Care if you were going to do that.
Oh, who knows?
Yeah.
I know.
Well, the things I think people got away with in 93, 94.
Well, another time stamp was the first chant from the crowd of, whoop, there it is.
Classic.
Yes. So
Tag team.
So either they were getting behind Scorpio or they were trying to channel Men on a Mission.
What would you say is the whoop, there it is of this current generation?
As a wrestling version of the chant?
I would just say as a public pop culture tune
gosh.
I think would really timestamp this era if you heard it 20 years from now.
Maybe something from Taylor Swift.
She doesn't have anything nearly as recognizable as...
I'm sure there's an easy answer, but nothing's coming to me.
It's not Despacito. Nobody chants that. What is it?
What about...
Well, it'll come to us. It'll come to us. Leave us your suggestions.
What about how popular a team in orange and white spandex would be? Didn't these guys remind you of like the... Like those
creamsicles?
Creamsicles, exactly. That's exactly what I wanted to use to describe. That's what I thought of with these guys.
Creamsicles are orange and white, but I didn't necessarily think of that snack, delicious frozen snack, when I watched this match. No.
I wonder if Bagwell maybe did any of that kind of role-playing later on in his future career.
As a creamsicle? Nope, I don't know. I've not seen any of those. He's not a porn actor, is he? Or he's just he was a gigolo, or he is.
He later would become a gigolo, but prior to his wrestling career, I believe he did.
Oh, he did
adult
do
some films.
Oh, okay. Are you sure you don't want to Google this?
Well, I'm going to be careful here.
At work,
Marcus.
Make sure you have a private incognito mode.
Marcus Bagwell, adult film. Well, this one, the first thing that comes up is Buff Bagwell adult film coming. Look at this. I didn't even remember this. 2014, former WCW star signs deal with adult film company, his wife involved in contract talks. TMZ reports the former WCW star Buff Bagwell, who starred on Showtime's Gigolos, has caught the eye of an adult film company, Vivid. Vivid boss Steve Hirsch called a potential movie with Bagwell an absolute blockbuster. Hirsch, Buff, and Buff's wife, Judy. That's right. Buff's wife is named Judy Bagwell.
You're kidding.
Which is really weird.
Wow.
Met to work out a deal for his adult entertainment debut, which I guess never came to fruition. I guess it didn't turn into a blockbuster. But anyway, I don't remember that story at all from 3 years ago.
I wish I didn't know about it now.
Anyway, well, you can do your research about Bagwell's past. Anyway, we went through a commercial break. Roma guillotined Bagwell throat first onto the top rope. The crowd was very hot for Bagwell here. Got a near fall with a sunset flip out of the corner onto Roma. Then the crowd tried to get under Orndorff's skin by chanting Paula, which was a familiar chant for Paul. Because you see, what could be worse than being compared to a woman?
Nothing.
Paula.
That's the worst thing you could say to anybody.
Yes, Orndorff just was livid at this. They had the heat on Scorpio, fought to get the tag, and was continually cut off. There were all these double-team spots onto Scorpio. Heenan instructs the heels to, quote, rip his neck open. And the place explodes as Orndorff comes off the turnbuckle and Scorpio gets his foot up. Scorpio just falls backwards and tags in Bagwell. This was quite the hot tag. Just took a back bump falling backwards. It was like a trust fall without anyone there. Then there was a flying cross body and a missile drop kick by Bagwell. Orndorff distracted Nick Patrick during the pinning sequence, so Scorpio flew to the floor, missing Orndorff. Orndorff holds his knee up after the assassin loads the knee pad from the floor. And Roma goes to drive Bagwell into the loaded knee, but counters, and Roma gets run into the loaded knee. And then he pins Roma for the big pop at the finish. This crowd went nuts for this.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that Scorpio and Bagwell will get a tag title shot against the Nasty Boys on WCW Saturday night that weekend as Heenan yells, "It's not fair," and asks Schiavone, "Do you own that suit?"
What?
To Schiavone. He asked him if he owned his suit.
Oh, okay.
Or if it was a cheap rental. You know, this was a fine tag match, but man, did this crowd get into it.
The crowd, I thought, was really hot throughout the entire show. And, you know, Buff or Marcus Bagwell, definitely by far the weakest in ring, but I thought the crowd absolutely took to him. He's a good-looking baby face that this audience just really connected with. And he and Scorpio, I thought, made a pretty decent, you know, blue chipper type of tag team. But to me, I thought Pretty Wonderful stole the show. I thought Paul Orndorff, great with his offense and timing, seemed to play the leader in the whole match. It's just nice to see like somebody deliver like a really nice classic worked punch like a Paul Orndorff. That I don't know if at some point wrestling punches just either evolved or devolved, depending on who you ask, but punches just simply don't look the same anymore. And I wonder if they look better now or if they're worse. But I see like a Paul Orndorff punch or like a Jerry Lawler punch, and I think there's like an art to it that's not really replicated anymore.
Yeah, I think Orndorff's WCW run is not always focused upon, but he had a good time in the early 90s in WCW, in particular during this tag team with him and Roma. I thought, you know, it's just good tag team wrestling that Orndorff was able to do during this period of his career when he was still active at the time before pretty much being transitioned over to the power plant. So I thought a good opener to this show from these four. Then we come back and we immediately go to our next match, which is teacher versus student. Ron Simmons against Ice Train.
Something else I noticed about these early shows, I mean, for a television production, I think what we typically see from the WWE now is just at the very least some build up, some video package or something to lead you into the action. But on this show, it was just kind of bell to bell action. We don't have enough time for entrances. We'll come right back, and here's the match.
And there is actually quite a substantial storyline leading into this one that I don't think anybody would have any knowledge of if they're just watching this, unless they would have to pick it up throughout the match as from the commentary.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not like this got a ton of time either. They only went 3.5 minutes here. Simmons got slammed on the floor and an ice train went for this football tackle and missed, running into the post. Schiavone promotes that the greatest announcer of all time, Gordon Solie, would be joining them for the next match, with Heenan responding, "I don't like Gordon Solie." Simmons then drives his shoulder into the turnbuckle and hit this shitty sunset flip out of the corner. Ice train did. Followed by this bad-looking power slam and missed with another shoulder block into the turnbuckle and ended with a schoolboy by Simmons for the win at 3:36. And Simmons wins the match, goes to the floor, and repeatedly speaks into the camera saying, "I am the man. I am the man." And Heenan says that Ice Train has the IQ of a doorknob.
Wow.
He was pretty all over the place, Ice Train.
Yeah, certainly
like,
not.
This guy seemed like a mess.
Well, he's a big heavyweight who maybe looked a little clumsy. Not the most prettiest match, but I thought it told an interesting story, you know? Pretty easy to follow, teacher versus student. Ice Train basically does all of Ron Simmons' moves, and Simmons, the teacher, actually had to cheat to beat his student, which I thought was neat. It's like playing Ken versus Ryu with both guys like doing the same moves.
Then Okerlund plugged the WCW hotline.
You never played Street Fighter, I take it.
Not much, but I know that Ken and Ryu had probably a better coordination than these
two.
Oh,
yeah.
Okerlund plugs the hotline, and tonight after the show, you can call in to talk to Bobby Heenan. Which I wonder if he would have more than one word answers for the hotline listeners.
Could Canadians ever call in?
I think you could call in.
Did you ever call?
No, I never did.
Did you get your parents' permission?
I don't know if any kids did. I call in to hear pre-recorded comments and spend money for it? But these were a huge business at the time. The 900 line was a huge revenue stream for the company.
I suppose it's kind of the modern day, or back then it was their Patreon. Their version of Patreon.
Kind of.
Yeah, the hotline.
Yeah. So then we had just this bizarre segment where Okerlund brings in Steve Austin and Colonel Robert Parker.
Colonel Rob Austin.
Colonel Rob Austin and, yeah.
Stunning Rob Parker.
To think way that 4 years later,
oh my God,
one of these individuals would be the guy that would lead this entire industry to its next boom period.
I think that's also what's so incredible about this show in general to me. This was 94, okay? And to see what wrestling looked like just 4 years later is incredible.
Yes.
It seemed like it jumped maybe 10, 15 years in evolution in that time. Whereas, like, you think back 4 years from now, 2013, does wrestling really look any different from 2013 to 2017? No. But between 94 and 98, especially looking at a guy like Steve Austin, what changes he would go through, it's really incredible to think about.
Just to go from – this is January 1994 to a year and a half later when Nitro launches.
Sure, right.
I mean,
yes.
WCW itself went – like this was still very primitive WCW look.
It felt
to
like
the
80s.
Yeah, I mean –
I watched this show.
It was – you know, some people have said kind of tongue-in-cheek that a lot of these WCW shows, it looked like – a high school prom with like the setup. And it's like, it was pretty, like they did not have elaborate sets or state of the art production. I mean, it was all fine. You were within the Turner Broadcasting System, but it still had that very localized vibe to it. It didn't feel kind of like a national product.
I'll tell you, like, and this goes back to, you know, the lack of video packages leading into the matches. It's like, it seemed like more of a show that was just geared for the live setting rather than an actual television.
Had a very cookie cutter production too. It was like match. It was pretty much match with very little in between. And
logic.
That would continue into 98, 99. Right. Like their pay-per-view production, very, like they wouldn't go crazy with backstage stuff. It was just pretty much from match to video, match, video.
Logical, you know, like if you're just going to put basically a camera on a live wrestling event, this is probably what it would look like. But I think wrestling now, there's a lot more focus put into the actual TV side of things.
So Austin is dressed as Colonel Parker, doing a Southern accent like Parker. So Parker then told this long story
about a dog and how he's going to do the same thing to Brian Pillman as he did to this poor dog. And Pillman's going to have to wear a chicken suit.
Yes. And what was the storyline here? Because he was the colonel and they were teasing each other about like Colonel Sanders.
Yeah. So this was following the split with Austin and Pillman, mm-hmm. and Austin being linked now to Parker. And now Colonel Parker was the one in the actual match with Brian Pillman. And yes.
What do we know about like Steve Austin at this time? Like how, where was he at? What was his mindset like at this time in his career?
I mean, at this time, I think a lot of people were pretty high on this guy. I mean, you go back to this time period, it's not like this was someone that I think everyone thought that he could be better utilized than he was at the time. What was really his – and this was a period where I think a lot of focus was on him, and this was before Hogan came in. And once Hogan came in, I mean, that was where – I mean, he went through some injuries. He was really discarded at this time because so much of WCW became focused on ex-WWF guys coming in. They were getting prominent spots, and your Steve Austins were somewhat swept under the rug. And ultimately, Austin left the company then in 95. But yeah, he was looked upon as someone that could be a much bigger star than he was, not looking at him as the transformative star that he actually would become. But very solid technical wrestler. Like he had a very different style before all the neck problems that he had that you were seeing in WCW at this time. And Okerlund then announces that the new WCW commissioner is here and brings in Nick Bockwinkel, who notes how honored he feels to be here, notes made mention of his father, Warren Bockwinkel, and how he's going to keep his eye on these off-the-wall personalities. And Nick Bockwinkel would serve in this role for about 2 years with the company. And yeah, just an interesting trivia note that it was both Bobby Heenan and Nick Bockwinkel that were introduced on the same night here in WCW.
Now, how effective do you think Bockwinkel was in this role? He just seemed to play a very serious commissioner. Nothing
yeah,
over the
he
top,
was
no
he was
character.
Kind of like William Regal's role.
Right.
Just he would come in for a ruling, wasn't really embedded into any of the storylines and such. He was just like your elder statesman right. of the profession that played your babyface authority when need be and wasn't all over every single show. And speaking of which, our next match featured Lord Steven Regal along with Bill Dundee, a.k.a. Sir William, in his corner, defending the television title against Dustin Rhodes.
Guys still employed.
Yes, with Gordon Solie and Bobby Heenan on commentary. And apparently the story here was Tony Schiavone was actually really sick for this show, and they had Solie call some of the matches to give Schiavone a break.
Wow, interesting. And what was that like? What was Gordon Solie's role in the company at the time?
He was, you know, he was like a guy that they had working for the company that would just do select matches.
Like Jim Ross now?
Somewhat more active than Jim Ross is now. But yeah, kind of a similar role.
And was that because they were looking to transition him out, or is he looking to retire?
Like this was near the end of where he was, you know, as an announcer, he wasn't a guy that you'd be flying all over the place every week. So he was kind of looked upon as like this Hall of Fame announcer that would come in for certain occasions and call matches. So this was right at kind of the tail end of his time with WCW, throughout this year. Regal started off with a full Nelson and was flipped over. Rhodes had a rear chin lock as Regal just repeatedly taps before that was the signal of an end of a match. Lots of submission offense from Regal. He applied a wrist lock, and then Bobby Heenan noted that it's a dog-eat-dog world.
You ever seen a dog eat another dog?
I don't think I've ever seen a dog eat a dog.
Yeah.
Not in this world.
Yeah.
Nor did he complete the sentence stating either was a milk bone, to quote Michael Cole.
Apparently that was a line he actually said.
Yeah, it was brought up.
Yeah.
Regal takes his back with a crossface, and Heenan is so amused that it's an Englishman riding a cowboy. And Solie just says, oh my. Regal is controlling the match as they announce the 10-minute mark with 5 minutes remaining. Regal then uses a straitjacket with the arms. Rhodes breaks out, flips him. He lands a lariat. Then Regal rolls to the floor, checks Sir William's pocket to check the time left. And for the remainder of the match, it's Regal just trying to kill time. Rhodes stopped a sunset flip, landed several punches to the head. Regal goes back to the floor. And then Rhodes chases. And as Solie said, tried to suplex him back in.
Yes, nice.
Which Gordon Solie, to right till the end, always pronounced it in its proper pronunciation, suplex.
Why is it the proper pronunciation? Where does that term originate? Where does suplex, that word, originate from?
I don't know. Maybe it's from the Pancratian days. But that was
suplex.
Yeah.
Is it French?
Look up the origin of
word
suplex.
Okay.
I think Moro's used it every now and then.
Suplex? He'll say suplex? Okay. Oh, man. This is... Okay. Word of origin. Oh, of uncertain origin is what I can find. I'm sorry. So, this is just... It's not very entertaining to radio. I'm sure people...
This isn't as quick as finding out about Buff Bagwell's porn contract of a few years ago. Let's see if we can...
We'll edit this out.
Okay, one person saying here it's the Greco-Roman pronunciation of the maneuver. Yeah, we don't have any concrete explanation.
I buy it. Welcome to Suplex City.
Okay, here we go. This is from the Wrestling Classics message board. I once asked Gordon that question myself. His answer was, that's the way it was pronounced in France. He also said it made people like us interested in why he said it. It means to turn over with a reverse or a reverse turnover. Our English pronunciation is different. The German name Steinborn sometimes is pronounced Steinborn by some people. Okay, we're going off into different topics.
So what, it's French?
French is...
Is it even a French word?
I guess so.
Okay.
There you go. Suplex.
All right, so...
Suplex City, bitch.
Yeah, so we'll be saying that forever.
So anyway, Regal is just trying to ride out the clock here. We have a minute left. So Rhodes hits a back body drop to Regal into the ring from the ramp. Regal rolls out. Rhodes nails both Sir William and Regal into one another, ramming their heads, hits an elbow off the top, and with seconds to go, as Gary Michael Capetta is counting down, does Rhodes go for the cover? No, he lifts Regal up because he's got to hit a bulldog, which he executes with like 2 seconds left, and then he gets on top of him, and time expires. Like, what a fool.
Well, he didn't. He knew he needed to hit his finish before he could get the man
down. He was down.
Yeah, but not down enough to be able to lay down for the three.
Well, guaranteed. Who cares? You didn't have enough time. Like, he was literally counting down from 10, and he picked him up.
Well, he really wanted to get his shit in, okay?
Well, it cost him the championship here.
Well, listen, you can't time these things perfectly, okay? But I do feel like time limit draws, I think they should be brought back. I think there are great ways to extend feuds, even escalate them, you know, if the match happens to be good. And... it's just a way to bring quality wrestling to TV without going 50-50 booking or doing stupid DQ finishes. I'd miss the time limit draw.
I think they should be there for all television matches, and you only have to do a draw every now and then. There's no reason you couldn't do 20-minute draws on television, and everyone knows it. And
now, I suppose I know that... And this is also probably the reason why in MMA there are no draws. It's maybe, you know, the feeling is probably that the viewer feels cheated if they don't get a definitive outcome.
But think of how many times we have 50-50 booking where a guy wins 1 week and loses the next.
Exactly.
MMA, you're not doing rematches every other week.
Exactly. In wrestling, people feel cheated anyway when you give them a bullshit DQ finish or something along those lines, right? I guess they do what? Count out, double count outs? That are kind of similar, but they just like double countouts don't have the same drama as two people going to war, you know, for 15 minutes and just building up to climaxes like this countout where Dustin Rhodes, in your opinion, fucked up completely.
So from there, we just instantly, like, this felt like TNA where they would do something in the ring and then you immediately cut away and we go right to the stage where Gene Okerlund is with Aaron Neville, the singer, and he says he came to see Dustin and his father and then said, I like all of them. Thanks, Aaron.
He had nothing to say.
Nothing. Can you just talk Just say anything. And
I like all of them.
It's like I'm a big fan of the guy you're replacing as Booker.
Yeah.
So there you have it, Aaron Neville. The Nasty Boys, accompanied by Missy Hyatt, were defending the tag. They were not defending the tag titles. This was a non-title match against Cactus Jack and Max Payne. And for anyone that has seen, you know, some of the surgeries that Mick Foley has recently gone through, and he's had a lot of trouble getting around, some of the matches he was having at this time probably answer a lot of those questions. Soley remained here with Heenan for this match. They introduced Missy Hyatt as, quote, the nastiest woman in WCW. And then we had...
Is that true?
That's what the announcer called her.
What? Yeah. Might be true.
This was before Donald Trump labeling that nasty woman.
Who's that?
That's what he called Hillary Clinton last year in the campaign. So Jack was introduced from Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, and Max Payne hailing from the state of Euphoria.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I think I understand that, what that means.
I don't know what the... I don't know where that state went in the election last year. Did it go red or blue?
State of Euphoria. So, okay. So what was his character? Was he like a hippie? Like a dude who did a lot of drugs?
In not so many words.
Painkillers, perhaps?
This was a guy who came out with a trailer for a documentary years later. Do you remember seeing this?
I do. I wish we...
That never would, made it out.
I wish that would come out, and I wish we could review it.
There's actually a drug deal taking place in this trailer that you can watch. And can you imagine this guy just like with his camcorder out, and no one gave a fuck.
Yeah.
And then he was going to release it.
I have to wonder if any copies of that thing still exist and who's seen it. These days with footage leaking so easily, I still have some hope that we'll get the Max Payne documentary someday.
I feel every copy of that documentary was taken right around the same time period, along with Tom Zenk, and they were all locked in a room together.
Oh, you think it's in the vault?
Zenk and all the copies are in like the WWE warehouse somewhere because we haven't heard from any of them.
Nope.
Perry Saturn was in there for a while.
Yes.
No one could get a hold of him.
Sure.
So they went through a commercial break, come back, and they're going through the crowd. Soley assumes they just got lost. And then finally, the Nasty Boys get jumped from behind when Max Payne and Cactus Jack finally make their entrance and attack the Nasty Boys from behind. So this had to have been a hell of a long wait during the commercial break as the Nasty Boys just stood there facing one direction for the run-in after the commercial break. Jack then hits a running elbow off the apron to Knobs and then did the exact same thing to Jerry Sags. This is probably why this man's hip was a mess.
Just giving these away.
And no one cared. Like, there was no reaction.
Oh,
there was nothing to these.
First of all, it was a wide shot. Max Payne was off doing his own thing, so you never even got that focus. No build-up. And it was the beginning of the match. Like, it was done really for no real purpose.
Yeah. I mean, those were...
I'm sure Foley himself will tell you that he wishes.
Oh, I'm sure he regrets some of these. And, you know, those leaps off the apron, those piled up quickly. Then it settles into a more traditional tag match as the Nasties got the advantage on Max Payne. Payne came back and applied a Fujiwara armbar, which was the penalizer, to Knobs. And it quickly gets broken up. Sags trips Payne from the floor. Knobs takes a chair, a plastic seated chair. And just like,
no, this was metal, dude.
Was this metal?
This was like one of those metal chairs with the fabric like on like cushioning on it.
Christ. And he just wallops Max Payne in the head with this.
Oh, my goodness.
Full force.
Ugh.
This looked awful. Jack tagged in and takes all three over the top to the floor with a clothesline, hit a double arm DDT to Knobs. Then Sags hits an elbow drop to Jack, and Payne does the same to Knobs. Nick Patrick turns around, and it's Cactus Jack on top of Knobs for the cover and gets the pinfall. And Gordon Soley says how they deserve a tag title shot. And after the match, Max Payne and Cactus Jack are ready to celebrate, but not before they get finished with Missy Hyatt. So they each take turns forcing themselves onto Missy Hyatt and kissing her. Soley says that Missy has been embarrassed beyond words. I can think of a few words that describe this. And then we had a slow motion replay of the kisses. And Cactus Jack clearly like, doesn't even come close to kissing Missy Hyatt. He, like, sniffs her neck.
But he's got a wife at home watching.
I guess.
He probably knew that maybe in 23 years' time, somebody will be looking back at this footage. And
I wonder how this is going to age.
Yeah.
In a more...
I don't know if I want to...
socially aware culture.
Yeah, be a babyface sexually assaulting the heel manager.
This is not a babyface spot that holds up well, no. And it's a prevalent one in even the 90s.
When was the last time we saw it?
A guy forcing himself onto a woman?
Kissing a heel female, you know?
I feel it wasn't all that long ago we were routinely getting the spank spot with a guy that would take the heel female and put her over his knee and slap her.
No, I don't think you really see it too often. Man, this match was pretty awful. Pretty ugly. And, I mean, I suppose for a Nasty Boys match with Max Payne and Mick Foley, I don't know maybe if you would have expected that much more. Finish was really ugly too. Lots of just noise. Lots of shit happening. Just made it a really noisy match.
These two teams had some really good brawls together on some other events. This was kind of, I don't know. It was kind of a scaled down version of one of their brawls. And Okerlund then says, there's a lot of rumors going around at WCW and commotion backstage involving the Nasty Boys and Missy Hyatt. And that was the hotline tease.
Oh, okay.
So, man, 1994, racing for your rotary dial. Then there was a video recap of the Brian Pillman-Steve Austin feud as we went all the way back 12 days ago to January 15th with Pillman and Austin fighting, with the winner of the match taking on Colonel Rob Parker for the chicken suit.
What? So why would Steve Austin face Colonel Parker?
They had stated here to the winner. Maybe I misread, and maybe it was Pillman had to beat Austin.
Right. Yeah.
But still kind of backwards that we were going, that was the match we were building to. But anyway, I guess getting your hands on the manager was the idea. And so Pillman reversed a power slam to pin Austin, who was the U.S. champion at the time, to lead to this chicken soup match. And then a shot of them trying to put the chicken head onto Pillman when Dustin Rhodes made the save for Pillman so that he wouldn't have to endure the embarrassment of wearing a chicken suit.
Oh, I would hate that.
Could you imagine? A chicken suit. And actually, at the day we're recording this is the 20th anniversary of Brian Pillman's passing from 1997.
No.
Colonel Robert Parker, accompanied by Steve Austin versus Brian Pillman. Loser wears the chicken suit, wait for it, on WCW Saturday night.
Yeah.
I was kind of wondering why you would have tuned in at this point. This felt like, you know when you'd have big stipulation on a pay-per-view, but you'd have to tune in to the following television for the payoff? The guy gets his head shaved and you don't get to see it?
Yeah, I hated that.
That's what this show felt like. Mm. This was building up Saturday night. Which is not on the WWE Network. Those are, to me, it's like, wouldn't you rather see some of those classic Saturday nights than Thunder going up on the network?
Depends on, I guess, what era of wrestling you watch. I assume most fans watch late 90s. Man, Bob Parker is huge. And did you get the same vibe as me that he looked strikingly very similar to Bob Torrance?
Jesus.
It was just like Bob Torrance.
Did I tell you the story about...
Bob Torrance is a former colleague of ours at the Fight Network, by the way.
Did I tell you this? Have I shared the story about him and teaching? He was working at a school here in Toronto, and my cousin was...
Yeah.
My cousin was in his class.
You just told
and
me.
Mentioned to him that, hey, do you know John Pollock? And then he referred to my cousin as... John Pollock's cousin for the entire semester.
Yes.
Okay. I can't remember.
I don't know if you told me or somebody else here told me.
Maybe. I can't remember either. But anyway.
Yeah, this guy looks just like Bob Parker.
Well, if you want a visual, have you ever seen Colonel Rob Parker in his Speedo?
No. Oh, yes, I did on this show.
Not on this show. This is just him by a pool wearing a Speedo. It's a widely circulated photo.
He wore trunks in this one.
I guess so. There was less left for the imagination in the Speedo shot.
Okay.
Brian Pillman comes out eating KFC, which is also the title sponsor of this Sunday's Hell in a Cell. So everything links together.
Wow.
I don't know if they were getting sponsorship dollars for this.
Pillman was throwing the KFC into the crowd.
And I'd be pissed off if I had a drumstick, greasy drumstick.
Oh, that'd be disgusting.
Land in my hair.
What if you had bought a brand new shirt at the merch table then a goddamn breast hits you and gets all that shit all over it?
It was like a box as well, so like you probably had like creamy coleslaw in there. Maybe it was honey barbecue, rotisserie wings or some shit. I'd be really pissed off.
The loose kernel, Brian Pillman.
Wow.
So this was our build-up, the chicken soup match, and this is when Shivani just plugged all that was going down on Saturday night. You could see the loser of this in a chicken suit. We've got a WCW tag title match, and Johnny B. Badd will be taking on Shanghai Pierce, where if Pierce loses, he will be unmasked.
I'm so glad we're not reviewing that.
Ugh. Pillman goes after Austin on the floor. It's all Pillman on offense. He goes to leave, and then Pillman goes after them and back body drops Austin on the ramp, which prompts the boss, comma, man, to come out.
The boss, man.
He comes out and stops Colonel Rob Parker from leaving, so Pillman jumps into his arms, and Heenan calls him a hick.
The boss?
The boss.
Okay, so wait a second. So did Ray Traylor show up as the boss in WCW?
Yes.
And then why did he give it up? I guess it was because it wasn't working.
I'm trying to remember how it worked out. I think that they challenged the...
So WWE filed something?
I don't remember exactly how it worked out. But then he went from... Like, he ended up as the Guardian Angel at one point. Like, he went through all these iterations, but...
The Guardian Angel.
Oh, God. They came up with so many awful ideas for poor Ray Traylor. Angel. Austin attacks Pillman in the ring, drops him on the top rope, then the boss sends Parker back in. Pillman fires up like he's the third member of the Fantastics here from the 80s. And Heenan says, I'd like to see Pillman extra crispy. Austin then knocks Pillman off the top for a two count. The boss chases Steve Austin to the back. And then Pillman uses a schoolboy to pin Robert Parker at 542. And Pillman just leaps for joy in celebration. And Shivani proclaims, we will have chicken this Saturday night. Mm. And this whole match was a commercial for Saturday night on TBS.
It was also a commercial for KFC.
It was. Mm. So that was our match.
Yeah, I thought this sucked. We didn't even get the payoff on this show. Again, just I think a lot of shenanigans on the outside. Not a very good match, obviously. You know, I suppose if there's anything to take away, it's that Steve Austin here, he continued doing that accent on the ringside. And I think he really showed glimpses of just a man who always had a humorous side he wanted to showcase.
Main event time. Ric Flair and Sting taking on Big Van Vader and Ravishing Rick Rude with Harley Race in a tag elimination match. Hmm. So both partners had to be eliminated in order for the other team to win. Now, this was a very confusing time because Ric Flair was the WCW champion and Rick Rude was the WCW international champion. Yes. So we had two titles in one company.
So the international championship is the big gold belt.
Yes. So what had happened, as we try to explain this, was that when Ric Flair left WCW, he had possession of the big gold belt.
In 1991?
1991. And Jim Herd wanted the title back, and he said, that's cool, but I want my deposit I initially put down for the title that the champions put down with interest. Herd politely said, fuck you. Flair said, okay, fuck off. And ended up going on TV with the title. Anyway, they went through all those legal issues. So what happened was WCW continued with their own championship and also had the NWA championship. And then when the NWA pulled out from working with WCW, they had to rename that title. Then they got everything.
Let's backtrack a little. So what did the belts look like? So WCW made their championship, and that's the one Flair holds here. That's the one Ron Simmons held, correct? Like the smaller WCW one.
Yeah, right? That's the one they had made after Flair left.
And you're saying the NWA still continued using the big gold belt?
The NWA, they had the NWA title.
Yeah.
But then when the NWA pulled out, they had to switch that title and also could no longer call it the NWA title.
Right.
So that's where it was called the Big Gold Belt for a while, and then it was just essentially they created this fictional subsidiary, WCW International.
Yes.
And when Flair returned in 1993, he ended up becoming the – I'm trying to get this all straight. He became the international champion, would lose that title to Rick Rude, and then won this title from Vader. And eventually, a few months after this, on the next Clash of the Champions, they would thankfully and finally unify these titles.
What a fucking mess.
Yes, a total mess at this time where we had two world champions, and it was very, very confusing. Rick Rude's tights.
Always a standout.
These were great.
Yeah.
He had all his recent opponents airbrushed with the caption, "I beat him."
Man, that's an interview I would love to hear. Rick Rude's tights artist.
Did you ever hear the story of him when he went on Regis and Kathy Lee?
No.
And they took off his robe and revealed, with Kathy Lee standing there, Kathy Lee's photo airbrushed on his dick.
Whoa.
And Kathy Lee is horrified. And I believe that as the story goes, like Kathy Lee's husband, both of them were just furious over this.
Both husbands?
No, Kathy Lee's husband.
Oh, I see.
It's Tom.
The guy who cheated on her.
Yes. Gifford? Frank Gifford. Yeah. That's who I'm thinking of. Yes. Anyway, so that was the story of...
Awesome.
And it's a readily available clip. Anyway, I don't think Cactus Jack got as upset with his face being airbrushed on his ass here. But these are great tights.
Yeah. A lot of work put into them. And sometimes they wouldn't even be worn all that often.
Yeah, I hope he at least took these like on the road for the house shows and stuff. Not
I don't know.
Wore them and never again. Bobby Heenan... he had a lot of great calls on this show, but not exactly a fortune teller, said he thinks that Ric Flair's career could be over with tonight. This could be it. January 27th, 94. They got the heat on Sting early on, and Bobby Heenan says, Schiavone's mentioning going out to Bourbon Street after, and Heenan says, speaking of Bourbon Street, have you seen Gordon? And Schiavone goes, will you stop? Mm-hmm. In our closest to a gorilla Heenan moment. Mm-hmm. And
what did you think of their chemistry, Schiavone and Heenan?
It was on this first night, I thought Heenan did really well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought he and Schiavone had pretty good chemistry at this point. Obviously, I guess.
Pretty tough comparison to make to Monsoon, but they were fine on the show. And Heenan was really good on this show. And mm-hmm. I mean, of course. I mean, this line was obviously kind of a veiled reference to Gordon Solie, who was known to be quite the drinker at this stage. Mm-hmm. Vader hit this diving sunset flip off the second turnbuckle. Sting stopped it, and during this exchange, Vader's mask came off, and they start trading blows. Sting hits a release German suplex to Vader, and then tags in Flair for the first time as they go to commercial. Vader is in. He splashes Flair in the corner as Harley Race yells, kill him. And Vader hits a Vader bomb. Flair is yelling in agony and follows with a superplex. And Heenan is calling this the end of an era. Vader goes to the very top and hits a top rope superplex, which was a very big spot.
Mm-hmm.
Heenan brings up Flair's plane crash where he broke his back and how bad this damage is. Vader goes to the top again, but Sting drags Flair away. Flair grabs a chair, and Bockwinkle, who was on commentary for this match, sitting in with Heenan and Schiavone, stops Vader. Race gets in the middle, and then Vader storms away, and at the top of his lungs just yells, shit!
I wonder if they caught that on TBS.
They didn't hear.
Yeah, not on the network.
Nope, probably not. Vader and Flair end up eliminated. After all of this, Flair is too hurt, and Vader, I guess, is just thrown out of the match.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was a pretty lackluster elimination. Yes, and I get that this was supposed to be building up to something else, but I devoted my time to this. I put an hour, 40 minutes into this.
Yeah, and this was supposed to be a big injury to Flair, so he would go in hurt to the Thunderdome match with Vader in February. And Flair is carried to the back. Sting and Rude are left. There is this weird atomic drop spot that Sting goes for the move, and Rude comes down awkwardly
and Sting just grabs his head and goes down. This is very strange. Rude was in control. He posed over top Sting. There was a long camel clutch applied. Sting lifted him up, hit an electric chair. This was very slow. Sting then holds on to the rope to block a Rude awakening, hits his own to Rude for a big pop. Rude gets his foot on the bottom rope, and then Sting reverses a pile driver, hits it, goes to the top, hits a splash, and pins Rick Rude as the match ends, and Sting is your winner.
I found the match pretty boring, unfortunately. I mean, I think the cast of characters in this match and throughout the entire show are really high level with a great history. But the match itself, maybe it's just a style, maybe it's a lack of finality since this was just a setup for a bigger match, but I really found it pretty boring.
Yeah, I'll say, you know, I got into the tag match at certain points. I think the crowd really got into this, but really it felt like that opening tag match was maybe one of the only bright spots on the show, to be quite honest. Like, this was a very nothing Clash of the Champions.
Yeah.
Other than Heenan's debut. That's kind of the only noteworthy thing on this show. And in many ways, I thought Heenan was the best part of this show.
Yeah.
So, a high point for his WCW run. And it ended with Heenan lifting up his Zach Morris cell phone to plug the hotline and call in for his segment, because they would have an update on Ric Flair on the hotline as well. And then we had the saddest pyro display to end the show.
Yeah.
Right at the entranceway.
I know. Why even waste your money?
Clash of the Champions 26, everyone. Mm. That was it.
Yeah, I mean, oof. Thankfully this show wasn't a longer show. Otherwise, I think I would have had a much tougher time. But, you know, you just like look at the roster. On paper, this looks like it would be actually pretty good. But the show itself just didn't really feel like it was necessarily worth watching.
Yeah, it was a pretty dull show. I would give this a 3.2 out of 10.
Yeah, I give it about a 3.5 out of 10.
Well, that was WCW. And we're not going to learn from our lesson, because we're sticking with WCW for our next review.
Well, it's not WCW that's necessarily the issue. It's maybe just hopefully that one singular show. But the reason why we are going back to WCW... Oh, first of all, do we have feedback?
Oh, yeah. Let's get to the one who watched this. This is all about you, Christian Small, who writes, an interesting pick. Yeah, we'll say. But I'm not complaining, as it was Heenan's debut for WCW, and it was really his show, as he was a ton of fun to listen to. The only downside was Gene's selling of it at the very beginning of the show was a bit silly in my view. So here are my views on the show. First, I'm not sure, but I do believe that during your 8 years of this show, you have seen every WCW Tag Championship combination involving Buff Bagwell, his team with the Patriot, Shane Douglas, his part in the American Males, and now Scorpio. Second, I always loved me some Brian Pillman. He was my first favorite wrestler and still is. I can't believe it's been 20 years since his passing, so watching this match was a lot of fun to me. Speaking of fun, I enjoyed the Nasty segment against Jack and Payne. They would have had a much better wild brawl later on, but this was still great. My final point is that Ric Flair set the standard for how a world champion should dress. And yet on this show, the picture they use of him in a dad's Christmas jumper, Slick Rick wasn't styling and profiling when they took that thing. Overall, this was an easy watch with nothing too bad in my view. So Christian seemed to get a kick out of this show more than us, but also noting the Ric Flair Christmas sweater, which I never read the feedback ahead of time, so it's always fun when we make similar observations. But thank you, Christian, for being our lone piece of feedback to Clash of the Champions 26.
This podcast was made just for you.
It is.
Yep.
It's all for you, Christian. Mm-hmm. All right. So the announcement was made this past week that the next NXT TakeOver will feature the first ever War Games in a WWF event with the next NXT TakeOver event built around the famous match.
With two rings,
no less. So what we're going to do, this was Wei's idea, is we are going to take four different War Games matches and we're going to review each of them on the next review away, which is going to be coming out on Friday, October the 20th. So we're a little early for War Games, but we're going to take a look at four matches. And Wei, we have decided to pick the very first two, which are all on the network, if you just go and look up the War Games collection.
Yes, Google the War Games collection on the WWE Network if you have access. And you, if you want to, you can watch every War Games match that they have in there, or you can pick the select four that we were about to announce.
So the first two are from
July of 1987 with the July 4th and July 31st, 1987 matches. Yep. Those are the first two.
These are the first two ever War Games.
Then we're going to skip ahead and review the War Games from Wrestle War on February 24th, 1991, a match that was rated 5 stars by Dave Meltzer. So we will go back and review that one. And then we are going to review the last real one they did. I believe they did one on in 2000 on Nitro that was a modified one that was just it was awful, and it's not on this collection. So the last real one was Fall Brawl 98, featuring the Ultimate Warrior appearing.
Oh, what else?
This featured Team WCW taking on Team NWO Hollywood and Team NWO Wolfpack, and it is not 5 stars.
Okay.
So that's all right. That's your pick. So two from 1987, 1991, and 1998. Those four matches will be reviewed on the next Review Away.
I think it's a good topical thing to look back at. I'm sure a lot of people either haven't seen a War Games match in a long time or maybe have never seen a War Games match at all. So let's go back and learn about this concept that I think people are so fondly remember.
Yeah, and I also want to get different feedback as well. I'm cool if you want to leave feedback and thoughts on any War Games matches, because I was kind of blown away by just how well-received this announcement was this past week, mm-hmm. which, to me, War Games was never one of my favorite matches. And I think part of that was I was not growing up watching the NWA in the 80s when it was the match, the blow-off match. And I'm just blown away by everyone just – it's always been a match that people brought up that WWE has never done, and there was such a overwhelmingly positive response to that announcement
I'm actually curious to know how many people of those who responded so positively have actually seen a War Games match. I feel like a lot of it is just maybe the hype surrounding the visual aspect of it, seeing two rings together with the big cage over top. It's a spectacle, you know, and even if the – if the match itself, hopefully the match itself is good, but
I think it'll be a really well put together match.
Yeah, I think so too. But I think just the idea of having two rings together with a cage over top of it, the WWE has never done that before. So I think that in itself is probably one of the main draws.
All right, so that will be when you hear the next Review Away. Friday, October the 20th, 4 War Games matches, and the feedback thread will be up to give us your opinions of past War Games matches and your expectations for the TakeOver match as well. So we will be chatting that coming up on October the 20th. So that is it for us, and we will chat with you next week.
Stunning Steve Austin. Look at this. Colonel Robert Parker, before I talk to you, Austin, you have no business here. You don't even have a manager's license.
Oh, I beg to differ with you, sir. I've obtained my wrestler's license, and I'm out here, the United States champion, to second a big, tall man, the man that rules the world, and to make sure that Flying Brian is wearing that chicken suit come Saturday night.